Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. Well, the weather is looking good. The foliage is in bloom. The bugs are biting. The wild animals are lurking, stalking their next meals. Perfect time for a hike. Our guest today is Alicia Philly, a health and fitness writer, physical therapist, and founder of The Healthy Hiker. She's with us to help you get ready to hit the trail. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Feel free to email your questions about fitness and hiking to voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email address, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Alicia Philly, your hiking and fitness calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we talk about how you can stay in shape and hit the trail. We're joined again today by Alicia Philly, an internationally published health and fitness writer, founder of The Healthy Hiker. That's a program that helps hikers regain their health so they can feel confident on the trail and stop worrying about being left behind or stalked by wild animals. As a licensed physical therapist for 30 years, Alicia specializes in the treatment of runners and endurance athletes. She specializes in helping hikers hike with less knee pain and more confidence. She's an avid hiker herself and a runner and is passionate about sharing her love for the great outdoors. You got a question? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you could email voxpop@wamc.org. Alicia Philly, how are you?
Hey, Ray, I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. Not as fit as I should be, not as fit as you. What have you been up to this winter?
Oh, boy, this winter has really been a busy one for me. Just keeping up with life, but getting a little spring hiking. So I was in Chattanooga area last week, enjoying some of their trails. It's wonderful. It's springtime there. I know where you are, it's a little bit of shoulder season, but I think you guys are finally turning the corner to spring. Is that right?
It's a beautiful day today. It is gorgeous out. I was out in the
awesome.
Back of my house yesterday. The bees are already swarming, so it feels like it's almost really spring.
That's terrific. That means people are going to start itching to get out on the trail if they haven't already.
Have you ever calculated how many miles in your life that you have hiked?
I don't typically keep track. I have a history of being a runner, and when you start keeping really detailed stats, then sometimes it starts to turn into a job.
Yeah.
So I hike just for pleasure and recreation. However, I do encourage people to keep some sort of journal, and there are some hikers who, especially if they're doing something like section hiking or, have some real goals, will keep a spreadsheet. And so I do encourage people to keep a journal, and that can mean anything from just jotting it down on your calendar or planner when you hike and just approximately how far it is, to keeping a really detailed spreadsheet about not only that information, but what you took with you, how prepared you were, how you felt. And it's also really important, if you're going to keep track of that, to put down if you had any challenges for a hike. So it's always good to know, and you might start to notice some trends. Like if you go out for a 3-mile hike and you felt great, and then you go out for a 5-mile hike and your hip bothers you, or you go for a particularly steep hike, maybe that has more elevation than you're used to, and coming down your knee bothers you, and you might start to notice that trend. And that's going to give you some insight into, maybe there's something here that I need to address so that I can continue to hike in my most healthy, fit, and confident way.
You mentioned, and by the way, we're joined by Alicia Philly today. We talk about hiking and fitness every so often in springtime, so it's a good time to do that. You mentioned that, in the wintertime, you slow down a little bit, and then you hit it in the spring. Obviously, you're fairly youthful still, but what training do you do to get ready to hit those trails? What muscle groups are you focusing on?
Yeah, so I do exactly the same thing that I recommend for all of the clients that I train and all of my followers. I really focus on four major things. The first one is strength, getting that resistance training in, making sure that I'm training not just my legs, which are the obvious ones for hiking, but also your core so that you're nice and stable, and your upper body so you have good posture, you can carry a pack with ease and not a whole lot of effort. So making sure you're getting in that strength training. And the second thing, of course, is flexibility training, making sure that you're staying supple, stretched out so that you don't get stiff, so that you have the flexibility you need to scramble, to really, climb up some crazy rocks or jump across, hop across rocks that you have to do to cross a stream or a creek. You need that, keep that flexibility. And then the third thing that I alluded to is stability, making sure that core is nice and strong. And then the fourth thing is the cardiovascular fitness. And that almost has two subdivided things. So one of those is endurance, so making sure you're getting lots of long, slow cardio training in, and then a little bit of HIIT training, a little bit of more intense training so that you are used to that high level of cardiac output when you need to climb, when you need to do switchbacks. So I address all of those things in my own training, and that's exactly how I set up plans for clients and recommend for folks to really make sure you're not just doing one thing. You really have to hit it all so that you're well-rounded in all aspects and can really hike your best.
As we age, though, it's tougher and tougher to hit all of those things at the same time. In the Healthy Hiker, which is your program that helps hikers sort of maybe they've been out of the game a while, or they have some injuries and you get them back into shape. How do you pace it? In other words, is it an age thing and you keep people at a slower pace getting ready, or do you set your sights low? Alicia Philly, how does it work?
Well, this is not a boot camp situation. This is not a 30-day challenge. Most of my clients are 45 and older, with the majority of them being over 50. And so we're going to take an approach that's going to appreciate your aging body, and it's going to ease you in. And I always tell my clients, I'm shooting for the sweet spot of challenging but doable. You want your exercise to feel like you did something, but you also don't ever want to feel like you couldn't do it, it was too much, or that you have to spend the next couple of days recovering and hobbling because you're so sore. When that happens, when you go into those really intense programs, it's no fun. Nobody wants to feel like that after they do a workout for the next couple of days. And so that's kind of the sweet spot that I aim for. And the other thing I really coach my clients on, because a lot of times my clients are kind of perfectionists and they want to be able to do everything right and correctly, but I also really coach them on giving themselves some grace, right? We're playing the long game here. What we're doing is we're putting pennies in the bank every single day.
Yeah.
We're not making big investments all at once. We're just putting pennies in the bank every day, and we're going to watch that investment grow. And sometimes you can put in 3 pennies and sometimes you can only put in 1 penny, and that's okay. So really coaching people to have that mindset, to play the long game, and then to keep their eye on the benchmarks, make sure we're measuring goals, make sure they're seeing their progress. That's what keeps people going and invested, and that's what produces lifestyle changes. Because really, I'm all about training someone for a particular trip. If you're going to do the Camino, if you want to do Rim to Rim in the Grand Canyon, you want to hike a 14er, hit all the White Peaks, whatever it is you want to do, I'm all for that. But at the end of the day, when that is done, I want you to continue to be able to be active and seek out all kinds of adventure for the rest of your life. So we're looking at lifestyle change, too.
We're joined today by Alicia Philly, an internationally published health and fitness writer and founder of The Healthy Hiker, which helps hikers regain their health so they can feel confident on the trail. Our number, if you have a question about hiking and or fitness, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org. You still do much running?
I do get in a couple of runs a week. I don't run as much as I used to, but for me, it's a wonderful social and release event. For me, it's part of my identity. So I do still still run. It's not essential. You don't have to run to be a great hiker. That's just something that I enjoy and I still do.
Do you think that hiking is more of a schlep to get ready and physically fit enough to do it well, or is running a tougher nut to crack when you're just starting out or just restarting?
Oh, I think running is harder
to
do. Because hiking is, you can really choose your own adventure. So, but running has some standards. So if you're going to train for a race, you're training either for a 5K or a 10K or, you know, a half marathon or a full marathon. So it's got some standardized things that you have to shoot for. But hiking is choose your own adventure. So I always tell people, if you're just starting out, find your local parks. There's going to be a trail, even if it's an urban trail, even if it's a paved trail. You know, hiking to me is going out for a walk with the intention of being in nature. So it doesn't have to look a certain way. You don't have to scale a mountain to hike. You can find local hikes that are wonderful, that give you all the benefits of the physical exercise of hiking, as well as the mental, emotional, spiritual aspects of being in nature. So that's, you know, anyone can start hiking anytime, anywhere with very little equipment and very little training. And I just encourage everybody to get out there.
Alicia Philly's our guest today. It's Hiking and Fitness on the program. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Hiking and Fitness today with Alicia Philly from all the way out in Texas. I assume that's where you are today on the phone, yeah?
Today I am in Texas.
Do you have any hiking goals, any places you want to be this spring and summer?
Gosh, anywhere on the trail is where I want to be. But I would like to get to Colorado and do a little bit more there. Oddly enough, I have not spent much time in Colorado, a little bit. So I'd like to get out there a little bit this summer, maybe.
Back in the old days when I was driving around and everybody used maps, maybe 30 years ago, there were triptychs. And you had sort of, you turned the page and then, oh, I'm going to Chattanooga today. And then you knew how to get there. Is there something analogous to that, or some sort of a big atlas for hikers?
You know, there's all kinds of books for particular regions. So there's a series called 60 Hikes Within 60 Miles. I think that's the name of it. That has most major cities or metropolitan areas. You can find one of those books that will give you what's going on in your local region. And they're pretty well detailed and documented and give you lots of great information. But in addition to books, there's many, many apps out there, and they all vary in their specificity and detail. The most common, the most used, the one I recommend because it's super easy to navigate is called All Trails. And it's a wonderful app. I always recommend that hikers have that. They will give you very detailed maps in there and also reviews. So it's really important before you go out on a hike to read the reviews so that you can see if someone's been out there recently, what the conditions are. You want to know if the trail's washed out. You want to know if it's muddy in places. Maybe there's still some ice or snow up at the higher elevations on the hike. Like, you want to know that information so that you're prepared. So the reviews on All Trails are one of my favorite things to do to make sure I look at before I go out on a hike. Even a trail that I'm very familiar with, I'll still go in and check the reviews for people who've been there in the last week or two.
It's Alicia Philly today, Hiking and Fitness on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. And Alicia, before we hit the phones, this email from Marion. Please address balance problems and their solution. After decades of hiking, I've begun to feel unsure of uneven wooded trails. I hate to just hike on sidewalks. And that's from Marion.
Sure. We all tend to get a little more unstable as we age. So balance becomes more and more of an issue as we age. So it's quite common to sort of lose your confidence when it comes to hiking uneven trails. A lot of that has to do with the fact that as we get older, we start to lose muscle mass. When we lose muscle mass, we actually become weaker. So that's why that resistance training is really important, making sure you're keeping a strong core so that you're nice and stable. You also start to lose your flexibility as you age. You have changes in vision. So sometimes if you're someone who's got some cataracts developing, that might start to cloud your vision a little bit. And vision is really important when it comes to balance and being sure-footed. So you always want to make sure you're addressing that. And your vestibular system changes, too. It's just not, you know, sadly, as we age, everything is not as sharp as it once was.
Oh, God. Bob Dylan wrote a song, Everything is Broken, which I'm feeling every day, actually. So, yeah, you know. But is there an age where you might tell someone gently, hey, you know, the sidewalks aren't a bad idea?
No. What I would say is let's work on some of the things, some of your challenges, some of the places where you're feeling unsure. Let's work on that and let's get you better, because I think that there can always be improvements. You can always improve your function. Sidewalks are fabulous. And I love urban hikes. But if you want to spend time on more uneven or rugged trails, yeah, let's work on what's going on. Let's work on that balance. Let's work on your core stability. Let's improve your strength. Let's make sure you've got, you know, the right kind of visual cues that you need. Are you wearing your glasses when you're hiking? Some people wear glasses during the day and then they won't wear them when they're hiking. But that's really important to make sure you're doing that. So there's some things that we would look at to like figure out, okay, well, what are the challenges? What are the things that are affecting you and help making you feel this way? And then let's work on that so that you feel more stable and you can get out there and do the things you want to do.
Alicia Philly's with us today. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is that telephone number. We'll begin in Herkimer. Joe, you're on.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Welcome.
So I'm 56 years old. I had a total hip replacement surgery just over two years ago now. And I do a lot of strength training, and I want to run the Boilermaker. So I started training, and I get a lot of cramps in my calves. 2 weeks ago, I played racquetball. I jumped up, and when I landed, I felt something pop in the back and behind my knee, my calf there, and it felt like a trolley horse. And ever since then, it's been, I run, and I cramp up.
Oh, boy. Alicia.
Any suggestions I could do?
Yeah, it's possible that when you jumped up that you may have had a little tear in your calf muscle, and that's not uncommon, especially in older gentlemen, because, you know, that flexibility does start to go. So you might want to consider having somebody take a look at that just to make sure you are healing if that's the case. But, you know, the cramping in your calf may be due to, it can be due to lots of things. It can be due to just regular dehydration. It can be due to being low in electrolytes. So maybe trying to take in some electrolytes like a Gatorade. You don't have to use Gatorade. There are lots of products out there, but some sort of electrolytes. Of course, bananas are the classic. You know, if you're having cramps, try a banana because they're full of potassium. But you also need sodium. You also need magnesium. So that's something that I would try first, is just making sure that you're well hydrated, that you're stretching, and that you've got enough electrolytes in your system so that your muscles have everything they need.
Joe.
Okay, thank you.
Hey,
also,
Joe.
Go
ahead, Joe.
So after I run or something, I sit down occasionally. Sometimes I stand up, and I get like a full leg cramp in my leg. That was inside the groin all the way down to past my knee. And that lasts for about 5 minutes before it lets loose.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it sounds like that cramping is a consistent problem for you, Joe. So I would really make sure that you're getting your electrolytes in and making sure you're hydrated, especially if you're out running. You may be losing more than you realize. So just that might be something that you can try that's a real simple solution. It might give you a lot of relief. So that's where I'd go first.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Joe, real quick, are you okay with Alicia calling you an older gentleman?
Yeah, I'm old. I'm old.
Oh, come on, man. You're 56. All right. Well, thank you for the call. Go ahead, Alicia.
Okay, just for clarity, I didn't say he was an older gentleman. I said calf. tearing that calf muscle is common in older gentlemen.
Oh, I thought you were taking a shot at Joe and Herkimer there.
No. Joe's a spring chicken. He's doing a lot and keeping up, doing great.
Thank you for clearing that up. You know, I was doing lawn work this weekend, and something it gets me off the couch, so it's not my favorite thing to do. But I had a wheelbarrow full of 200 or 300 pounds of dirt. And I tell you, I worked some muscles that I haven't worked in a long time. You could actually feel them screaming out in pain. It was amazing, you know?
You know, one of my favorite things is to have worked with clients through the winter, and then they go out and they start doing their spring cleanup, and they message me the next day, and they say, I did so much work yesterday, I felt so good, and you know what? I can barely feel it today. Because there's no better litmus test for how in shape you are than a spring yard cleanup.
Yep, I failed the litmus test, and that's amazing. Let's go to Lakeville, Connecticut. Alan, you're on with Alicia Philly.
Oh, thanks so much for taking my call. I probably am an older gentleman. I'm 64, and I used to run a lot and love to run, and I can't run anymore, so I started hiking. I got a Alaskan Malamute dog to make sure that I got out there and did a lot of hiking. And so I've been hiking pretty much every day for an hour to 2 hours. And for 6 months, I've been adding weight to it to get ready for backpacking. And I would do about 5 pounds more every 2 weeks. And I got up to about 50 pounds. And then my hips started bugging me. And so I went to an orthopedic guy, and he had me do an MRI, and luckily it showed nothing. I was afraid maybe I needed a hip replacement or something. But as soon as he said, well, you should stop doing it with the weight. And I said, well, but that's what I love doing. That's what I'm doing right now. And he said, well, you don't have to do what I tell you to do, but that's probably what's going to help you. And sure enough, I had already stopped doing that, and my hip feels great. But now I'm not sure how to get back into it.
Sure. Well, first of all, hi, Alan. Thanks for calling in. I think you had a really great approach. 5 pounds every 2 weeks is a really nice addition of load, and it gives your body enough time to get used to it. What I would question is, if you're are you an experienced backpacker, or is it something you're going to want to start doing?
No, I've been doing it all my life.
Okay, and how heavy is your pack typically when you go out on a trek?
Well, I've always thought it was somewhere around 50, 60 pounds, but as I put weights in there to measure it, it seems like that's heavier than I probably normally was taking.
Yeah, I suspect, you know, really 45 is really the max that any backpacker is going to feel comfortable doing for the most part. So I just don't think you need to go that high. What I would do is I would look at your pack weight, your actual pack weight, like pack it up like you're going to, factor in how much water you're going to have, factor in how much food, and that's your goal, right? There's no need to just progressively add and add and add. You only have to add as much as you're going to need, how much, you know, train with as much weight as you're going to need. And I call that specificity of training, right? You want to work towards exactly what you're going to do when you're out on the trail. So that's the first thing I would do. And then probably you're going to be able to pull that weight back. The second thing is that, you know, just how long you spend carrying that much load. If you know, how long are you going to be out on the trail? Are you do a week at a time? Do you do 2 weeks at a time? What is your goal?
Oh, anywhere from 5 days to a week usually.
Okay. Then if you're running around with a 50-pound pack for more than a week at a time, then again, you're exceeding the load that you're going to need. So there's no reason to, if you're a runner, then you've probably followed a training program where you get up to your peak and then you have that recovery before your actual event, right? That's what I would suggest, is that you, once you reach your peak and you can perform every, 5 to 7 days carrying that 40-pound pack, well, then there's no need to see if you can do 2 weeks and see if you can do 3 weeks. Like, that's just, you're not going to need that much ability. So I wouldn't put your body through that. I would then start to taper, just like you would a running program, give your body some time to recover. So when I design backpack training for folks, what I do is we look at exactly these things. How much weight you're going to carry? How far do you intend to carry it? How long do you think that's going to take you? What is the elevation that you're going to be at and having to cover each day? And then I back that training up, right? So that you factor the week before your intended trip, that's going to be your taper week. You're going to hit your peak about a week and a half before your intended trip. And then how far out do you need to start your training, you know, backing that weight down 5 pounds, 5 pounds, 5 pounds until you get to where you are. So does that make sense? It's very similar to a running plan.
Yeah,
where you would ramp up slowly. And then really keeping in mind, again, that specificity of training so that you don't do more than you need. If you're going to only train for a half marathon, you don't run 22 miles. That's just silly. You don't need to, right? So it's the same thing with this kind of training. And I'm pretty sure that's what happened, is that you exceeded the capacity for load within your body. Like, you just did more than it was ready to handle.
All right, so, Alan, thank you very much for the call. Now, Alicia, how heavy is your backpack usually?
So because I am uber prepared and also am oftentimes out with other people, so I'm oftentimes leading a hike, then I'm even more prepared. So my day pack alone can weigh 10 to 15 pounds easily, but that means I've got extra water for anyone who runs out. I've got extra snacks for anyone who runs out. I've got all the 10 essentials and more. Now, saying that, when I backpack, I do backpack a little heavier than most people do. I don't mind the extra weight. I'm pretty comfortable at 40 pounds.
Yeah.
Whereas I train some clients who have a 25, you know, they're ultralight and they top out at 25 pounds, and that includes their water and their food. So, but I don't mind the extra weight. That's just me.
I would need a pack mule with me, I think, on the hike for that.
You know, there are people who hike and backpack with llamas.
You're kidding me. Do you have one?
I'm not kidding.
Really?
No, I don't have one, but there are folks who do this, and you can sign up for a llama trip. And some people just love that. They love having that animal companion with them. So, yeah, there's treks in Colorado and in Europe. Yeah, you can find them.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong taking a llama around with you? All right, this email from Lenny. My daughter asked me to join her on the Great Saunter, a 32-mile informal walk around the Manhattan perimeter. Saturday is the day. I'm 69 years old, pretty good shape. I walk regularly 2 to 5 miles a day. However, 32 miles seems a bit crazy to me. I'm going to give it a try. What are my chances of finishing without hurting my body in one day? That's from Lenny.
Oh, Lenny, that is amazing and wonderful and ambitious. So good for you. I love your adventurous spirit and I applaud you. Here's what I would do. Make sure that you have supplies on hand to take care of your feet. That's going to really be the first thing to go.
Yeah.
You are probably going to be wearing shoes that aren't tested beyond 5 miles. And so take a couple of extra pairs of socks so that you can change socks and make sure feet stay dry. Take Band-Aids, take some Body Glide for blisters on your feet or anywhere else that you might start to experience some chafing. And then just take your time and enjoy yourself. Like, just, you know, do what you can do and be thrilled that I'm just so impressed that your daughter invited you and wants to spend this time with you. So just enjoy that and savor that. And the 32 miles will take care of itself.
That's a long walk, though. How many hours will that take at an average pace?
You know, average walking city pace is about 19 minutes per mile, 19 to 20 minutes per mile. So most people could walk 3 miles an hour if they weren't stopping and oohing and aahing and looking at things and taking a break and all of that. So 3 miles an hour, that's at least 10 to 15 hours, I would suspect.
Wow. Alicia Philly is our guest today. It's Hiking and Fitness on today's edition of Vox Pop. 800 348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's grab one more call here before the next break. Chris is in Housatonic. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I got two questions for you.
Okay.
First, I'm a heart patient, and I do like to do hiking. And the second question is, what are the highest mountains that you've hiked?
Aha. Uh-huh. What is the highest mountain you've hiked, Alicia?
I have hiked around 12,000, a little over 12,000. So that's the highest elevation that I've been to. I have not tackled a 14er. Not Mount Everest, no, no.
No, that'd be a little more than a hike, Chris. That's
that's quite an excursion. Yeah, no,
Sherpa.
I haven't. You do. You absolutely, and an oxygen tank.
Is bike riding good for you?
Say it again, Chris.
Is bike riding good for you?
Not on Mount Everest.
No, but bike riding is one of my favorite cross-training activities for hikers. And here's why I like cycling. It's great endurance. So you can work on your cardiovascular endurance. It's wonderful for your heart and conditioning and just overall fitness. It's working your legs, but you're in a bit of an anti-gravity position. So it's really easy on joints. It's easy on knees. It's easy on ankles. So biking is just a wonderful activity, and it's a wonderful cross-training activity that I encourage my hiking clients to give that a try when we're developing their cardiovascular fitness routine.
Chris, thanks for the call. We have to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Alicia Philly has not hiked Mount Everest, but she's still very knowledgeable, and we'll be back and talk to her some more coming up. Horace Silver's group there, the Jody Grind on WAMC Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Alicia Philly joins us today. And before we get back to the show, I just want to remind you, this is day two of Public Media Giving Days. It's a national event. And WAMC, we appreciate it. We do a fund drive three times a year, and we appreciate anything that comes in. At all times of the year, you can pledge right now at WAMC.org. We produce a lot of local programming, which is not the standard in a lot of public radio stations. It's a way that we can, serve our community a little better. And so it costs some money. So if you want to throw a little our way, WAMC.org. It is Public Media Giving Day. Buy the premise and make your pledge. 800-348-2551 is our number here. It is Vox Pop. A couple of emails here, Alicia, then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Francis. I'm a 76-year-old. I'm not able to run any longer, but I power walk at least 2 miles a day. Never feel like I'm getting enough of a taxing workout. I just read about rucking, wearing a backpack with weights. What are your thoughts on this, especially for a senior who is in decent shape? What do you think about rucking?
Yeah. So, Francis, thanks for the question. It's a great question. And here's what I want to say is that a lot of people will get out and walk and, just like Francis, not really feel like they're getting much out of it other than, because our bodies accommodate. You go out and you walk your same 2 mile circuit every day. Your body gets really good at that. It becomes very efficient. So now how do you challenge it to work a little bit harder again? You can do that in a couple of ways. You'd have to change up the load, and you can change up the load by actually putting on a load. So adding weights, you can change it by increasing your speed, or you can change it by increasing the elevation that you have to work against.
Yeah.
So really it's increasing the work that your body has to do. Then you will have a cardiovascular response and an increased heart rate. So rucking is one way to do that. The other thing that I love about it is that for women, as we age, we start to lose our bone density. Adding weight to our body while we walk is a wonderful way to stimulate more bone growth for us. And so it's fantastic. It's a win-win. Now, rucking is a fancy word for, you know, it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of people. It can be as simple as just buying a weighted vest that you can get at, you know, your local outfitter or even your local big box, you know, discount store. A lot of them will have a weighted vest. You can do that very simply. If you have a day pack, you can put some bags of rice or beans in your day pack, something soft to add weight to it. And or you can buy a specialty rucking sack. You know, it's either a backpack or a specialty vest. Mm-hmm. It just, but that's not, you know, that's not necessary. So adding weight to your walk is definitely something that I recommend. The other thing you can do to increase your load while you're walking is use poles, not the way you do when you hike, but in a Nordic walking fashion. So I don't know if you're familiar with Nordic walking, but it's a special tip that you would put on the end of hiking poles. And that offers you a little bit of resistance. It offers you a little bit of extra load.
Yeah.
That too can increase your cardiovascular output. So great question, Francis, and definitely give it a try. I think it'd be a huge benefit for you.
Alicia Philly joins us today, an internationally published health and fitness writer, founder of The Healthy Hiker. Francis mentioned power walking. I wonder what the definition is. A lot of people say, I'm going power walking. They're walking up to the deli at the corner. Is there an actual thing that is power walking?
When people say power walking, most often they're referring to not just a stroll, but they've got their arms swinging. They do have a faster turnover or cadence, you know, with their walk.
Yeah.
So it's going a little faster. It's a little bit more of an aggressive walking style.
I've seen that. I always thought people were having some sort of medical issue, but they're just, that's power walking. Rachel writes, I'm an accomplished hiker. I hiked the 111 over 4,000 feet in the Northeast. I am now 62, having knee pain. I've tried various braces, NSAIDs, emu oil, etc. My knee just doesn't have the mobility to bend much more than 90 degrees. I had x-rays, no major concern. I refuse to give in to being old. I hike with someone who is 70 and has more mobility and no knee pain. Can you recommend a specific type of knee brace or exercises, something to give me some hope? And that's from Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for the question. Knee pain is my specialty, and I have worked with lots of different hikers on knee pain. In fact, I have a special knee pain protocol that I use with hikers. And that protocol involves increasing your flexibility, not just at the knee, but also at the hip and the ankle. I always tell people that the knee is like the middle child. It's a very simple hinge joint. So if there's something going on at the hip, if you have tightness in the ankle, it's going to need to have some give somewhere. And oftentimes the knee will bear the stress of that.
Yeah.
So working on the flexibility, working on strength, because believe it or not, you really have to be strong in your hips. You really have to be strong in your calf muscles in order to give the knee the support it needs. And then also just working on your core stability. When your core is stable, when you can help support your own weight, you don't have to work so hard in your lower body. And so that makes a big, big difference. So I wish I could give you one simple thing, but it's really a three-pronged approach that I use and have great success with my hikers. So I would tell you that there is hope. You definitely can improve. You definitely can have less knee pain, especially when you hike. But I would caution you against trying to find another passive approach. Things like braces, salves, balms, you know, taping, all of that is passive. And unfortunately, what you need is a more active approach to really change the structure and the way your body's working to support your knee.
You know, this would be a great time to mention your website, and there's a lot of great information there. We'll mention it again at the end of the show. But what is that website, Alicia?
It's thehealthyhiker.com.
TheHealthyHiker.com. And, full disclosure, I'm not much of a hiker, but I have enjoyed the website. There's a lot of great writing there, and very cool indeed. Let's go back to our phones. Frank in Guilderland. Frank, you're on.
Hi. In my retirement, I've decided to become a volunteer firefighter, and I'm doing a lot of heavy, stressful training using an air-mounted backpack similar to a scuba tank. And what I'm happening is I'm just going through the air very fast and doing all these climbing up ladders and crawling through mazes. how can an athlete, this is like an athlete, obviously, how can an athlete manage their breathing to breathe efficiently and conserve, in my case, conserve a limited amount of air?
Right. What I do with hikers when we're climbing up elevation and they are struggling, sometimes when your respiratory rate goes up, that sort of induces a little bit of a feeling of panic, which then sort of feeds into that high respiratory rate. And so I really encourage people to do what I call pursed lip breathing. And if you've got something in your mouth that you're breathing from, that's going to be a little bit more difficult. Because what I encourage hikers to do is to breathe in through their nose and then purse their lips like they're blowing out a birthday candle as they breathe out, so they're fully exhaling. But I think you can use that same technique, making sure that you have full exhales, that you really focus on slow and full exhales, and then inhale, just to really try to slow down your respiratory rate. The other thing I would do is I would make sure you're conditioning, make sure you're working on your cardiovascular status when you're not actively working on firefighting training. You know, make sure you're getting out for some hill climbing, stair climbing, running, if that's something you can do, anything that's, or even just like we talked about, rucking, walking with a load to improve your cardiovascular fitness, and that's going to help you as well.
Frank,
thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the
you
call.
Bet. Thank you, Frank. Thanks for doing that. Our volunteer firefighters are so important to our communities.
Right you are. Alicia Philly's our guest today. Number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And we've had several emails along the topic that James in Pittsfield is going to bring up now. Hello, James. You're on. No, that's not a good start. Hello. Oh, heavens. Hello, James. It's James and friends, that's the end of that. You know, okay, so why don't I just read some of those emails and maybe Frank will listen in.
Yeah, let's do that.
How do you feel about hiking poles? That's from Paul and Rhinebeck.
Absolutely. This comes up all the time. In fact, I have a very popular blog post that says, "Do these hiking poles make me look weak?" Somewhere along the lines, it became this misconception that hiking poles were for sissies, that they were for people who weren't strong, who weren't weak. But I recommend that everybody has a set of poles, and there's always going to be a good time to use them. Hiking poles are wonderful because they help you with your stability and your balance. They actually disperse the ground reaction forces that you experience when you're hiking, so it makes hiking easier on your joints. You now become a four-legged creature instead of a two-legged creature, so you're that much more stable. You have a bigger base of support. There's all kinds of benefits of hiking poles. I highly recommend them, and I highly recommend that you use them and you use them well. You need to make sure they're adjusted so that you have about a 90-degree bend in your elbow when you're walking on fairly, you know, even level ground. When you're going downhill, the hiking poles need to be a little bit longer so that you don't have to reach out so far, because each time you put your pole down, the ground is going to be further away from you. The opposite is true when you're hiking uphill. Your hiking poles need to be a little bit shorter, so you're going to have more of an acute angle in your elbow when you're hiking uphill, because when you reach forward, the ground is closer to you than it was, you know, previously. So make sure that you have hiking poles that you can adjust according to the conditions of the trail, and definitely utilize them. And some people, like, oftentimes I'll have both with me, but sometimes I'll just use one depending on what the conditions are, or sometimes I'll give one to another hiker who might be struggling, who didn't bring poles, something like that. So,
yeah.
You know, it always makes hiking a better experience for people.
Alicia Philly's our guest. Well, like space flight, weight is a concern, and what you carry. We talked about backpacks, and this is not being a smart aleck here. But if you're not using your hiking poles, where do you put them on a hike?
Well, you should have a day pack with you, because you're going to have something to carry your 10 essentials in. So,
do they fold up though? I mean.
Yeah. Most hiking poles will collapse, or they're spring loaded and you can kind of bend them.
Gotcha.
And so, yes, you can attach them to your pack.
All right, let's go back to the phones here in the waning moments with Alicia Philly, and we'll go to Eagle Mills. We know this guy. Joe, you're on.
Good afternoon. I wanted to point out that this Saturday is I Love My Park Day here in New York State.
Oh.
And you can call your local state park to volunteer to help clean it up and get it ready for the spring and summer.
That's nice.
I love that, Joe. Are you going to get out there this weekend?
I am going to be in Grafton Lake State Park.
Oh, good for you.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. Well, what a great program.
Great, Joe. And thanks for doing that. And thanks for doing all you do. Joe's a great volunteer here at the radio station. And he screens calls on Medical Monday very often here on Vox Pop. So thank you, Joe. Let's go to Lennox. And Elaine, you're on.
Hi. My question is, I've used to live out in Washington State, so I've done different sections of the Pacific Crest Trail. From Canada down to Oregon. And my dream is to do the entire length of just Washington State. And I'm about at like 10 miles. I'm 60. And I'm really scouring to try to find lightweight gear. So I'm looking for, it's very cold sometimes up on the PCT. So it could be really hot, and then at night it could get cold. In August it could snow. So I'm looking for a lightweight backpack, lightweight but synthetic, really warm, like below zero sleeping bag, and a sleeping mat, and wondering what you recommend.
You know, there's lots of different options out there. I would just do some research and then go try them out. Like, go to your local outfitter and actually lie down on a mat. You want to see, is the mat going to fit in your tent? Or, you know, you want to make sure if it's square corners and it's not going to fit, if it's rounded corners and it's going to be okay. Is it noisy when you roll around on it? Like, you know, just go and try out some of these things, and don't be shy about being in your outfitter and just seeing how everything works. Take it apart, put it back together. Because everyone is going to be very individual about the kind of equipment that they have. It's very personal. So, my recommendation is always just go put your hands on some and then start talking to some people, get in some Facebook groups, ask some questions. Hey, I'm looking at this. Does anybody use this? What are your favorite things about it? What do you not like about it? And that's true for any kind of equipment for anybody who's doing anything outdoors. I think that's just a great way to find something that's going to work right for you.
Elaine.
Yeah, I definitely have been on a lot of groups, and a lot of the lightweight stuff is not really at the stores. You know, some of the real high-tech gear. And I'm used to hiking in hiking shoes, but a lot of the people that are doing the PCT are in just, like, cross trainers. What do you think about
that? Yeah, so, you know, again, shoes are a very personal thing. I know that a lot of the ultralight people are going to trail runners because they're so much more lightweight. But you just have to figure out what are your particular needs for your particular feet. There are some trail runners that are awesome for particular folks. And then there are other people who don't do so great in trail runners, who really need the stability, who really want that extra support that you get from a more traditional hiking shoe. So, again, you just have to try some things out. I know that REI is wonderful about taking things back. So if you order something and you try it and it doesn't quite work for you, you can always return it. So find somebody with a really good return policy, and then just order some things and try them out.
All right, Elaine, thanks a lot. Hey, Alicia Philly, where are you headed next? What trail will you be happily wandering on next?
Next, I'm hoping to get back to Tennessee to maybe do a little hiking there. And then I've got my sights set on some trails over in Italy, actually, this summer, and then I'll be back in Utah. So I'm just kind of, you know, I hit the trails wherever I can.
You live the good life. Alicia Philly, one more time, how do people keep up with your information and all the stuff that you'd like to impart?
Yeah, they can go to thehealthyhiker.com. They can sign up for my free guide to healthy knees. And get on my email list. That's the best way to keep in touch with all of my great stuff. My great advice is to get on my email list and stay connected. Send me a message.
Great talking to you again, Alicia Philly. Have a great summer. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a blast talking to you and your listeners, and I appreciate it. You too. Take good care.
You betcha. Support comes from Stinging Nettle Apothecary, Main Street, Catskill, New York, offering handcrafted organic herb-based products, incorporating natural herbal remedies into daily life. StingingNettleNY.com. And Energy Catalyst Technologies, manufacturing geothermal heat pumps in Troy, New York, helping to heat and cool homes and businesses and reduce dependency of fossil fuels. Groundbreaking clean heat, energycatalysttech.com. There you are. The first time this week I have muffed an underwriting credit. It's Thursday. It's my best week ever. Thanks again to Alicia Philly for joining us. Thank you for listening and the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. We've got a weird one for you. We're going to have artificial intelligence expert Jim Hendler here from RPI. He'll join us for our first ever AI recipe help desk. You email us a list of a few items in your fridge or cupboard. Jim will put it into his computer, and then they'll come up with a recipe. Chef Gail Sokol will be on hand to tell you if the recipe stinks. And the early ones I saw really stink. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 p.m.